It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Republicans used to understand that the actions of a president matter, the words of a president matter, the rule of law matters, and the truth matters. Where are those Republicans today? At some point, someone has to stand up and in the face of fear of Fox News, fear of their base, fear of mean tweets, stand up for the values of this country.
Yeah, I have a question from Fox News, in fact. Your handling of the Flynn interview, how is it consistent with the investigations roadmap for agents, the domestic investigations operations guide?
Entirely consistent in my view.
Director Comey, the FBI's reputation has taken a big hit over the last year. Do you share any of the responsibility for that?
No. The FBI's reputation has taken a big hit because the President of the United States, with his acolytes, has lied about it constantly. And in the face of those lies, a whole lot of good people who watch your network believe that nonsense. That's a tragedy.
There's a lot of tragedy in that statement. Sandy Rios with you this morning. That was James Comey, former director of the FBI, in a brief presser after testifying before two committees in the House yesterday. Sandy Rios with you this morning. I honestly, even though I've thought about it and watched it, I'm still not quite sure what to say about it. James Comey used to be so convincing. I remember when he first came into the FBI, so impressive. You know, he's a big guy, so that helps him to be impressive. He's very articulate. He seems so sincere, and he still does seem so sincere. But what he's saying is just not true. It's almost like you're having an out-of-the-body experience to hear him talk. I want to play more of what he had to say in just a second. But first, I want to just remind you that today is the day of the sentencing of Michael Flynn, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, by the judge Emmett Sullivan. It will happen this morning. We've talked a great deal about it. We talked a lot about it yesterday. If you did not hear that discussion, please go on our Facebook page. There are some articles there that will lay out what's actually happening here. Since we last spoke, remember that the judge, Emmett Sullivan, had requested that Bob Mueller turn over information regarding what they call the 302s, which is what the FBI agents must fill out. It's like their private memory of these 302s don't often become public. They're not used in courts, as I understand it, generally. But it's a requirement for an FBI agent after they do an interrogation or have an interaction to record that while it's fresh on their minds in writing. It's their official 302. And the irony of the 302 in regard to the Flynn interrogation by those two FBI agents, one of them was Peter Strzok, in the White House, just a few days after President Trump had occupied the White House, and General Flynn was his national security advisor, the FBI basically tricked him and had him come over, one of those two agents to come over. And in that course of that, they didn't warn him. They'd advise that he not have counsel because it would be a lot of trouble and et cetera, et cetera. And they basically set him up. And it was in that interaction that he allegedly lied to the FBI. And so, but then we hear that the FBI agents themselves said they didn't think he lied. So you'd want to see the 302, wouldn't you? You'd want to know what those agents wrote. But the FBI did not present that, and Mueller did not present that in the whole Flynn hearing case. Instead, they gave them a 302 that was written 7 months later by, now we're understanding, Andy McCabe, who wasn't one of the agents there. So the cloud over this is whether Andrew McCabe actually got into that 302 and wrote it the way he wanted to write it. Because the agents at the time, Peter Strzok, said he felt Flynn was innocent. And I think the other agent whose name now is coming to the fore is Pientka, who's not even been talked about. In fact, Sarah Carter has an article this morning, "Why is the FBI muzzling the only person with credibility left in the Flynn investigation?" He was the other agent who did the interview with Michael Flynn. Where is he? Why has he been silenced? Why can't we talk to him? In fact, Senator Grassley, to what? I don't want to overstate this, but let me just say for a very long time, for months, has been asking the Justice Department and the FBI to have access to Agent Pienka to interview him on what his take is on that Flynn interaction. And they've just refused. So we are hearing overnight that the Mueller's office, under, I'm sure, tremendous pressure, because Judge Emmett Sullivan is known for making prosecutors answer for not handing over, I think it's called the Brady Rule, where they must hand over all the evidence, good and bad, that they have on a person that's under investigation. And we know that the Mueller team has not done that. So he's demanding that, and he's demanding the 302. Well, I heard last night, overnight, that prosecutor Brandon Van Grack filed a cover letter attempting to explain the reason for the Flynn interview on January 24th and explain why the report, in quote, inadvertently had a header that said draft document deliberative material. This is too much in the weeds. Basically, they're claiming that the first 302 was mislabeled, and they didn't mean to not turn it over. So this is what Sundance, who I often refer to, says this. Prosecutor Brandon Van Grack is attempting to hide the length of the small group deliberations. It seems he doesn't want the court to know that Andrew McCabe was involved in shaping how the 302 was written. All right, so there's too much detail there, but you get the gist of it. There's something rotten here in Denmark. Why do we not have that original 302? And it'll be very interesting to see what Judge Sullivan does this morning. This is an article by Sydney Powell, who's a prosecutor out of Texas. She's been our guest many times. And this is really an interesting piece that she's written. I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. Countless people, including a former federal prosecutor, seem oblivious to one of the greatest abuses, outrages, and tragedies of our criminal justice system. Innocent people forced to plead guilty every day. In fact, the Innocence Project has exonerated 31 people who spent a combined 150 years in prison on guilty pleas, and that's the only tip of the iceberg. This horrific injustice is solely attributable to the unchecked power of prosecutors who now function as prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner. They have unfettered discretion, no supervision, no limits, and most federal judges defer to them at every turn. There are two judges who I know who simply do not defer. One is Judge Emmett Sullivan, the judicial hero of my book, who will preside tomorrow over proceedings, that's today, over proceedings against Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. She goes on to explain how Emmett Sullivan makes sure that these prosecutors, because he has found abuse by them in the past, and he's pretty ticked about it. So this is a good judge to have over the Michael Flynn case. That doesn't mean he's going to exonerate him or let him go free. We don't know. But let me just say that Sydney goes on to say that the full weight of the government coming upon anyone, she says, can you even imagine what you would do if you had been a law-abiding good citizen all your life, suddenly found yourself the target of a special counsel investigation, threatened with life in prison, threatened with indictment of your children, your business associates saw your savings completely drained, had to start a GoFundMe account and be interrogated for hour after hour by people dying to trap you and send you to prison. Between the willingness of Congress to turn almost everything into a federal crime and the ability of federal prosecutors to stretch those statutes beyond imagination, there is no one in this country who could not be indicted were a prosecutor like Robert Mueller or Andrew Weissman to scour their life's records. We'll put that on our Facebook page. It's written by Sydney Powell, and so you can read and share it. I just did part of it. And the other part of this is that Andrew Weissman, of course, is the lead prosecutor for Bob Mueller. And there have been there's an interesting piece, which I can't go into right now, but it's written by Margot Cleveland in The Federalist, I believe. And she, this is her title, is Does Robert Mueller's Lead Prosecutor Have a History of Ethics Violations? Well, the answer is yes. And she goes through Andrew Weissman's history of bringing prosecutions and ruining people's lives, and she gives several examples. We will also put that on our Facebook page for you to read. All right, so Michael Flynn comes up for that this morning. Meanwhile, James Comey testified before Congress. You heard him deny to Catherine Herridge that he'd done anything wrong in the prosecution of General Flynn. But I want to remind you of some interview he did on MSNBC this week. We played it yesterday. I want you to hear how he laughs and brags about his part in this interrogation of General Flynn. Here it is.
Something I probably wouldn't have done or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration, in the George W. Bush administration, for example, or the Obama administration. So if the FBI wanted to send agents into the White House itself to interview a senior official, you would work through the White House counsel, and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
Yeah, so that's what he said. It's Mr. Upstanding. And I want to, do I have time here? I really, really would love for you to hear all of Comey's press conference. I would love to hear you hear how snarky he was. I think I'm going to run out of time, though, so let's listen to Catherine Herridge, at least tell her part of it. Maybe we'll play it later. Here's Catherine.
After the closed-door session, the former FBI Director James Comey took some reporters' questions, but he took none of the blame for any damage to the Bureau's credibility.
The FBI's reputation has taken a big hit because the President of the United States, with his acolytes, has lied about it constantly. But that damage has nothing to do with me.
Comey stood by the FBI interview of former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, though critics emphasize Flynn was discouraged from having a lawyer and was not warned that any false statements could be prosecuted. Comey declined to answer Fox's questions about whether he mishandled classified information when he shared with his lawyers memos documenting his conversations with the president.
That's nonsense. I'm very proud of the way the FBI conducted itself.
Heading into the nearly six-hour session behind closed doors, House Republicans were focused on Flynn.
For him, it's all about Jim Comey, and he thinks the rules don't apply to him.
Late Friday, the FBI released this heavily redacted memo used by Comey to brief incoming President Trump about the anti-Trump dossier, the DNC and Clinton campaign-funded opposition research. The FBI memos described them as, quote, private clients.
He seemed to indicate the other day that he wasn't aware of that until he read reports long after he was gone. I find that very hard to substantiate based on other evidence.
On Fox News, the president's personal attorney said his client's written answers for Robert Mueller are sufficient.
Is the special counsel, does he want to interview the president?
Over my dead body, I am disgusted with the tactics they have used in this case.
The president's weekend attacks on the FBI Michael Cohen investigation, calling his former personal attorney a rat, and the legality of a Cohen search warrant are cited by Democrats as more evidence that the Mueller probe needs protection from Republicans.
They seem to be wanting to play defense counsel for the president.
The Republicans will continue to rake Jim Comey over the coals for as long as they can, and it appears to be at the direction of President Trump.
All right, so there you go. This is how this is coming down. And just think about this. Remember that James Comey was the FBI director when President Trump was elected. He was the FBI director who decided, oh, Mrs. Clinton maybe wasn't so smart or wise, but no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges against her after she had violated her responsibility as Secretary of State to keep the highest possible secret. We know now that her private server was hacked, at least by Chinese operatives, that everything she sent, whether it was to President Obama at the time, to all of the operatives under her at State Department, to ambassadors and agents around the world, was accessed by foreign powers. And yet James Comey refused to bring any charges against her. And yet when President Trump was elected, he hastened to bring this completely salacious, tabloid-like dossier to the attention. We know now Judicial Watch is finding out that they sent it to senators, they sent it to the press, they tried to destroy the president, they tried to destroy Michael Flynn. I've been through that so many different times, and he has been virtually, any money that he might have had, he's lost his home. It's been a horrible ordeal. That's the James Comey, who's not responsible for bringing down the reputation of the FBI. He's completely innocent, and he wants to see the rule of order reestablished. Really? Really? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Maybe you've been hearing the messages from Preborn asking listeners to join together to help save babies' lives through ultrasound, and you're not sure how to respond. Here's the story of one woman who took that step.
I heard about Mission Preborn just before December of last year and asked my husband if we could give at least $140. Just last week, we received our packet. My husband came in the house and he was telling me, this is our preborn packet, the ultrasounds. I started crying without even seeing them. Not only were there five babies, but one of the moms was having twins. We were just elated for that.
For $140, you can sponsor five ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies' lives that were spared. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your sponsorship goes to saving babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News. And one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu.
There are times when people of goodwill have to stand up and fight, and that time has come for the good people of Ozark, Missouri. For a number of years, the town sponsored a drive-through Christmas light show in a local park. The centerpiece is a giant lighted cross. But the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a gang of out-of-town atheists and agnostics, filed a complaint demanding the cross be taken down. Instead of surrendering, town leaders have drawn a line in the sand. The cross, they said, will not come down. The Freedom From Religion Foundation fired back, saying it does not matter if 99% of the people in town support the cross. They say it's on public property and must be removed. The mayor brushed off their response, calling it a bunch of saber rattling. And I say good for the mayor. As history has demonstrated, the only way to deal with a bully is to fight back. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
The Senate Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer of New York. Senator Schumer, welcome back to Meet the Press, sir.
Morning. Good to be back, Chuck.
All right, let's start with the health care ruling. The assumption is there's going to be appeals. How do you appeal this law? Do you appeal the specific argument about the mandate or the entire ruling, or is it on severability? Where do you attack this decision?
Okay, well, first, Chuck, it's an awful ruling. It goes, of course, it undoes pre-existing conditions. It jeopardizes the tens of millions who are getting good health care in the exchange. But it goes way beyond that. It would knock out funding for treatment of opioids. It would raise drug prices and close the donut hole so seniors would pay more for drug prices. It would eliminate a lot of maternal care, all kinds of women's health. It's an awful, awful ruling. We're going to fight this tooth and nail. And the first thing we're going to do when we get back there in the Senate is put a vote on the floor urging an intervention in the case. The judge, a lot of this depends on congressional intent, and if a majority of the House and a majority of the Senate say that this case should be overturned, it'll have a tremendous effect on the appeal. Mm-hmm. So our first stop is the courts. We believe this should be overturned. It's an awful, awful decision. And it puts a lot of our Republicans in a box because they sort of were once, you know, two-faced. On the one hand, they said they want to preserve pre-existing conditions and preserve health care. On the other hand, Donald Trump and a large number of Republicans brought this court suit. So there are going to be a good number of Republicans who are going to really have to make a decision whether to join us in this intervention or face very severe consequences.
All right, that was Chuck Schumer with Chuck Todd talking about what a judge in Texas did the end of last week, and that was overturn or to find Obamacare unconstitutional. How long must we be discussing this? I guess a long time. And those of you on Obamacare probably have noticed that your premiums have just gone up exponentially. The deductible is outrageous, and that you end up paying for almost all of your medical care anyway, and that you cannot see the doctors you want to see. Well, I remember very clearly our next guest telling us about this lawsuit because he was part of making this thing happen. His name is Ken Cuccinelli. He's the former Attorney General of the state of Virginia. He's the head of Senate Conservatives Fund and a bunch of other things. But Ken Cuccinelli joins us this morning. Ken, you must be very gratified by this judge's decision.
Absolutely, Sandy. You know, it's funny. We listened to Chuck Schumer and he went on and on and on. The one thing you didn't hear about from Chuck Schumer was the Constitution. He doesn't like the result. You know, I remember testifying before the House Judiciary Committee on Obamacare after we filed our lawsuit in Virginia, and Democrat after Democrat asked me questions like, well, isn't there a lot of uncovered health care costs? Yes, there are. Isn't that bad? Yes, it is. And every follow-up was, well, isn't this constitutional? Well, no, this is not a random A, therefore B type of thing, and all they care about is outcomes. It's worth remembering when we get to discussions about judges, the only thing Chuck Schumer talked about in a judicial ruling, the only thing was consequences in the real world. It wasn't law. He never mentioned the law. He never mentioned the law. And this ruling by this judge, as you note, Sandy, is somewhat satisfying. It uses the Supreme Court's own ruling in 2012, applies it to the state of the law today after the Republicans zeroed out the tax penalty in Obamacare to find it unconstitutional. The legal reasoning is very simple. It is very simple and very straightforward and founded on a ruling that there are still five Supreme Court justices on the court today that made that ruling. So I am very gratified. I appreciate the judge having the guts to do this. And, of course, he did it like a conservative. He didn't issue an immediate nationwide injunction. He's letting it go through the appeal process before undoing it across the country. Now, I look forward to it being undone across the country, but this is the more judicially conservative approach.
Yeah. Well, it is pretty amazing, Ken, because I do remember you spelling this out, and you were telling many of us, this is going to work. This is right. This is a great approach. This is a reason why this thing can't stand. And here we are now, so many months later, a year, I'm not sure, and it's actually happened. Now, just to repeat what you just said, John Roberts declared that mandate to be a tax. It was an extrajudicial little act he did. That caused Obamacare to survive the Supreme Court challenge. And so you've turned it around and said, well, if the tax has been done away with by the Congress, then Obamacare can't stand anymore. Who were the attorneys general who came along in this suit, Ken?
There were 20 of them, led by Ken Paxton of Texas. You had people like Patrick Morrissey and Josh Hawley. Josh Hawley, of course, is now headed to the U.S. Senate. I don't think Chuck Schumer is going to get his vote on his little resolution. And almost all, I want to say with 20 of them, it was more than two-thirds of the Republican attorneys general. Not a single Democrat attorney general joined them, despite the rather obvious nature of the argument. This has been the continuation of a pattern. I mean, I was the first one to file suit on the original Obamacare. We filed 35 minutes after the president signed the bill. And in fact, the kind of language you just heard from Chuck Schumer, but the law professor version, where did these people get their law degree from Kmart, you know, all this from a bunch of Yale law professors, Balkin in particular, until in my case on December 10th of 2010, the judge in Richmond found Obamacare to be unconstitutional. And then even Balkin up there in Yale said, wow, this has gone from off the wall to on the wall. This is a real lawsuit now. And it remained that way. The best ruling on Obamacare in 8 years came next, and that was the Florida judge, Judge Vincent, his ruling with the multi-state case against Obamacare really was and still is the best ruling on Obamacare. And I don't mean the outcome. I mean the opinion. He walked right through it. It was brilliant. It was, I won't say it was concise. It wasn't short, but it was very accurate. It was a tutorial. And this judge, O'Connor here, has followed that kind of methodology like Judge Vinson's ruling in the first round of Obamacare cases. And Chuck Schumer can say what he wants. It ain't crazy when judges rule the right way.
No, it's not.
We expect judges to stand against this kind of political pressure and do exactly what this judge did.
Yeah, especially the Chief Justice on the Supreme Court, which brings me to the next thing. You know this is going to be challenged all the way up. It's just bound to go to the Supreme Court, Ken. And I can't imagine four justices not saying, yes, we'll hear it. Now I'm hearing that Kavanaugh has a mixed record on Obamacare. I don't know. Okay, two questions.
Well, but I said it on your show, but when Kavanaugh was picked, I said, well, if he's approved, which I expected, confirmed by the Senate, we'll have four liberals, three conservatives, and two Roberts. And we've already seen that hold up with the Planned Parenthood funding ruling. It was Roberts and Kavanaugh who did not vote to review it. Only one of them needed to. We'll see. Now, Justice Rod, the Chief Justice here, is a little bit hoisted on his own petard. I mean, this was his crazy ruling and his crazy rationale that any money that comes into the government is a tax. Which was the basis of his ruling, has been used by this district judge, along with the amendment to Obamacare with the tax bill in 2017, zeroing out the tax penalty, so-called tax penalty, that's rolled it forward. So you've got to think that the Chief Justice would vote for this. So that leaves the question mark at Kavanaugh. I think, Sandy, if I had to predict what's going to happen, what you and I have talked about is the first part of the ruling. We haven't talked about the second part, and that is that this judge wiped out all of Obamacare. I think you're not even going to see a serious legal debate that it is, in fact, unconstitutional. The other side will not, while they'll argue it, that is not going to be the focus of their attack. The focus of their attack is going to be how much of Obamacare ought to be ripped out root and branch. Root and branch. Remember that? Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. Yes, I do remember that.
And right now, this judge has ruled all of it is unconstitutional. I think that's going to get whittled down, or could get whittled down, to just pre-existing conditions and what's called community rating. And of course, the Republicans have been total wimp. Excuse me. Have been total wimps on this stuff, and they may very well congressionally reinstate at least pre-existing conditions or some form of it. And my guess is they're such chickens, they're such unbelievable chickens, that they won't even get anything for it. They won't move in the direction of free market health care. As you noted, Sandy, the Obamacare folks are seeing their premiums skyrocket yet again. They lost the choice of their doctor and insurer. They were lied to about all of that. It wasn't a mistake. It was a lie. And so that's what to watch in the next round is, does the complete undoing of Obamacare hold up? I think the unconstitutional ruling will hold up all the way. I think the real fight is going to be how much of Obamacare is ripped out.
Yeah, and so, but that's a, are you saying that that is a judicialist decision, or now isn't it that the Congress is going to be forced to contend with this, and we have this lefty House, which we know what they'll do. I don't know what they'll do. They'll whatever the worst possible scenario, and then you've got the weak Republican leadership in the Senate. But I can't imagine, honestly, Ken, okay, I can't imagine it, but I don't want to, that Mitch McConnell would cave to the what will be outrageous demands of the...
We could, Sandy, we could end up with the House that's coming in, we could end up with this ending up actually worse than Obamacare. This could be another step towards single payer. That's what you could end up seeing coming out of the House. And then the question is, do the Republicans tolerate that?
You know, Ken, the
and you only need about a dozen, 13 Republicans to be specific, for them to get over 60 votes.
Ken, the thing that I can't quite understand is how we made the quantum leap from not wanting socialized medicine or centralized health care, which is what the Republican position has long been, to if Obamacare fails, the government must provide something else. I don't understand why. It seems to me this is an incredible opportunity for the free market to get in, like right now, and establish something really good.
Well, a lot of us have joined the free market. I have MediShare for my family and have for 4.5 years since I left the Virginia Attorney General's office. And that's real insurance. We pay all our medical bills 100% in cash up to the deductible, and we got the highest deductible because that's what insurance is for catastrophes. And there are a lot of other people doing things like that where they're just bailing out of Obamacare and going the cash route. I'm hopeful that one of the outcomes of this long term is that we will get two systems. We'll get a system where those of us who are willing to get outside the government mandates go our own way. We're on our own hook. And we actually have insurance like insurance was meant to be, even if it's done in the form of co-ops and other things like MediShare. So there are other alternatives developing. And the news for Obamacare has been nothing but bad. Nothing but bad. As you noted, Sandy, earlier, I mean, their costs have gone up. Nobody's costs have gone down under Obamacare except a very small number of people. If that was the guiding decision post, then Obamacare would be absolute toast. But the Republicans in Congress don't make that case to the American people. They don't even point out to them how bad their health care situation has gotten. And it's, in fact, much worse because of the, I won't say forced retirements of so many doctors, but the frustrated retirements of so many doctors. And their children are not being encouraged to go into medicine. The people who know best, doctors in the system now, are not encouraging their children to go into medicine like their parents did. You've seen a drop of about 50% in the children of doctors going into the medical profession. To me, that is the most damning measure of the impact of Obamacare, and it still isn't really being felt. But we are headed a few years down the road for a major doctor shortage.
Yep. Well, not to mention research.
That's because of Obamacare.
And not to mention the no money now for, well, the money pool for research drying up and no place to experiment. It's just it's done a really damning thing to our health care. And so we'll watch as this thing unfolds and just pray that it makes it up to the Supreme Court quickly and the right decision is made and that the free market steps in. Ken, you were a champion on this once again. You saw things very clearly. So thank you for that. Ken Cuccinelli, well, with the Senate Conservatives Fund right now, but formerly the Attorney General of the state of Virginia. Ken, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, it's always a pleasure. Great to be with you.
Okay, thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In a continued crackdown on Christianity, about 100 Christians were snatched from their homes or from the streets in coordinated raids across southwest China. Authorities targeted members of the Early Rain Covenant Church across various districts of Chengdu, the provincial capital of Sichuan. The arrested worshipers include Wang Yi, pastor of the Early Rain Church. Anticipating arrest, he wrote a letter that was to be released if he went missing. In it, he wrote the reason the communist regime is filled with fear is because the church is no longer afraid of the government. Please pray for our brethren in China.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Our culture has been relentlessly feminized in the last two generations, leaving growing males uncertain about what it means to be a man in today's world. Well, Solomon wrote the book of Proverbs as a training manual for fathers to use with their sons. I have drawn on the lasting wisdom of Solomon to write my new book, The Boy to Man Book, a book on raising your son to true manhood. It's designed for a father to read with his 12-year-old son and includes a prayer a father can pray over his son at the end of each chapter. There are chapters on choosing good friends, controlling anger, how to handle pornography, how far a young man can go on a date, and how to recognize the woman he should marry. Get it today at afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. 2019 is upon us, and we're going to be going back to Washington, D.C. and to Williamsburg for our spiritual heritage tours. And if you've been wanting to go, maybe this is the year for you. These tours fill up several months in advance, and one of the reasons they do is because we have an actual historian, a professional historian, that comes on our tour with us. His name is Stephen McDowell. He's the president of the Providence Foundation, and he knows more about early American history, especially the Christian influence on early American history. He knows more than anybody I know. So, if you want to go with us, you can find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's in June and September. Pick the month you want to go. Find out more information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, a grievous wrong must be corrected. Federal Judge Emmett Sullivan is scheduled to impose a sentence on former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn for lying to the FBI. He's acknowledged doing so, but the more ominous misconduct was perpetrated by the FBI itself, evidently for the purpose of entrapping this decorated combat veteran. For example, FBI officials led General Flynn to believe that he was not the subject of an investigation. They then asked to interview him without going through proper White House channels and absent any counsel. They failed to read the general his rights and even concluded he hadn't intentionally lied, but charged that anyway. In light of such malfeasance, Judge Sullivan should dismiss the charges against General Flynn and instead hold accountable those in the FBI responsible for destroying the reputation and life of a great American warrior. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Exalted, 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 shall be exalted.
Is he Sandy Rios, that's that great song from The Messiah. Of course, it's a little different rendition than you're used to. It's from the Soulful Celebration, which I enjoy every Christmas, I have to say. I just think about those words, every valley shall be exalted. Well, what in the heck does that mean? We're going to be happy about valleys, sing songs to valleys? No, it means in Old English, Old King James English, it means that every valley will be elevated. It will be elevated, not exalted in terms of praise, but and the rough places, the passage goes on to say, will be made plain. Well, carpenters will understand that because they know what a plain is. The rough places will be made plain. They'll be made smooth. Justice is going to come. When the Messiah comes and when he comes next, it's all going to be made right. The valley is exalted and the rough places made plain. And that has to do, that includes all the things that are concerning you today in your private life, your personal life, as you get ready for Christmas. I know many people are thinking about family complications and maybe dysfunctional relationships and losses and sadnesses. And it also has to do with what's happening in government and in the world and the markets worldwide. We're hearing bad news. All of those things will be sorted out as God sets things right. The great judge of all things will set things right. And that's the promise of Christmas. Of course, he came first as a man born in a manger, as a little baby, God dwelling in the body of a man. Can you imagine? And he did that because of his great love for us. It's just an incredible story. There is no other story in the world like this story. No other God can, if there were this small g, if there were another God, the stories of other gods, they cannot lay claim to something so incredible. Just remember that. We're celebrating more than the birth of a baby. We are celebrating the birth of a Savior indeed. Well, I want to talk about immigration. We're going to talk about it a great deal tomorrow because you know that things are gearing up in Congress. What's going to happen? Is the government going to shut down at midnight on Friday? And if so, will that mean then that the president is going to get funding for his border wall? All of those questions. John Roberts did a report on it last night on Fox. Let's listen.
The White House Legislative Affairs Director Shahira Knight has been up on Capitol Hill all afternoon looking to put together some sort of Christmas miracle, and it's beginning to look like the White House's hard line on a border wall may not be so hard after all. Out there already is a proposal for a continuing resolution that would keep the government funded through the end of fiscal year 19, that's September 30th of 2019, that would provide $1.6 billion for about 65 miles of border fence through the Rio Grande sector of the southern border. That is one of the most active areas when it comes to cross-border migration. It wouldn't all be dedicated toward building a wall, but certainly a lot of it would. Democrats have already indicated that they may be able to support such a proposal in the House, and there is an increasing sentiment among many Republicans that they would rather go for a continuing resolution than shut down the government over Christmas. Now, the $1.6 billion is far less than the $5 billion that the president has been looking for. So I'm told by sources, watch for the White House to seek a legal opinion on whether it can use money from the defense appropriations, and this would be for defense construction, about $3.4 billion, to start building portions of the wall through the Department of Defense budget. Now, such a move would likely provoke howls of outrage among lawmakers on Capitol Hill who would complain and make the case that the president can't just shift around money in the defense budget as he pleases. But the White House may try to find a legal opinion allowing them to at least do some of that.
All right, John Roberts on Fox News. And I'm not sure. I mean, who could be? I'm not sure what's going to happen. We will have Rosemary Jenks from Numbers USA with us tomorrow morning because every 24-hour period brings something new. So Rosemary will join us and we'll do a more in-depth discussion about that. I want to tell you that this, of course, First Step Act, the so-called criminal reform bill, what some people are calling it the jailbreak bill. Tom Cotton was with us yesterday, Senator Cotton, who definitely opposes this. We put yesterday his editorial in the National Review on his amendments and why he thinks the First Step Act has to be fixed in order to keep violent criminals behind bars. So we'll put that on our Facebook page. And I want to tell you that your signature would be valuable and your call to your congressman and your senator would be invaluable. You go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net. We have a great alert, a way for you to contact your senators and ask them to vote for the Cotton-Kennedy amendments on this bill. And to drive the point home further, Daniel Horowitz has a brand new piece out yesterday evening. The CBO, First Step Act, will release dangerous criminals and add to the deficit. Daniel says, we've been told by the arbiters of morality among the political elite that we must empty the prisons because incarceration costs too much money. When it comes to public safety, suddenly everyone is a budget hawk. Well, late Friday, the Congressional Budget Office issued its fiscal score of the jailbreak bill and found that although this legislation will result in an outcome roughly equivalent to reducing the federal prison population by 53,000 inmates in 1 year, it will actually increase the deficit by $352 million. Given that most senators never read the bill and don't understand criminal justice, they are unlikely to be moved by the CBO score, but it shouldn't stop us from speaking the truth. The revelation from the CBO of how many convicts will leave federal prison early is jolting. Proponents of jailbreak who support this and similar bills precisely because it lets violent and dangerous felons out of prison suddenly get shy when there is public scrutiny on their legislation. They angrily contend that their bill is reform and won't release anyone. Well, now the CBO confirms that this is not the case. Imagine releasing the equivalent of 53,000 inmates in 1 year from the federal population, which houses only 10% of the nation's prisoners, usually the worst career felons, such as cartel and gang members. Even if one believes that there are a few individuals here and there who can and should be released early, there is no denying that if you cast such a wide net of early release on such a sizable portion of the most advanced felons in the country, it is a recipe for a public safety and law enforcement nightmare. Why do we have to continuously pull teeth from this bill and get proponents to keep revising it to exclude more dangerous criminals while they obdurately continue to extend eligibility to others? Why won't they just write a bill affirmatively targeting those who should get leniencies and leave everyone else out of the jailbreak? Answer, because that would expose the fact that most of the federal prison population, especially those serving longer sentences, does not consist of, quote, nonviolent, low-level, first-time offenders. So after releasing so many dangerous criminals, won't we at least enjoy these much-vaunted budget savings? No, says the CBO, and he goes on to talk about that a little bit more. This is Daniel's latest offering, and we will put this on our Facebook page so that you can also read that and then also link to afaaction.net to our alert to get you to call your senators and ask them to please vote for the Cotton-Kennedy amendments on that First Step Act. At least we could do that. And those amendments, in part, make sure that certain offenders are not going to be released, like child molesters and or child predators. I'm not sure what the exact name is, but it's one of those two things. Well, I promised you earlier, or at least I hinted, that I wanted you to hear more of James Comey's little act in the hall outside of Congress yesterday. I want you to hear it as much as we can play it here, because honestly, it's just astounding. It's astounding to me how convincing he is. It makes you understand why we once trusted him. So listen carefully as he comes out of the hearing room, and he's mad. He's been quizzed by Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and others on that committee. We'll be hearing today, by the way, about that transcript. But let's just hear his response to this gaggle of reporters in the hallway. Here's clip 12.
The rule of law matters and the truth matters. Where are those Republicans today? At some point, someone has to stand up, and in the face of fear of Fox News, fear of their base, fear of mean tweets, stand up for the values of this country and not slink away into retirement, but stand up and speak the truth. I find it frustrating to be here answering questions about things that are far less important than the values that this country is built upon. Happy to take your questions.
What impact does it have when the president calls Michael Cohen a rat, someone who's cooperating with an investigation, and questions how his office was raided by the FBI?
It undermines the rule of law. This is the president of the United States calling a witness who has cooperated with his own Justice Department a rat. Say that again to yourself at home and remind yourself where we have ended up. This is not about Republicans and Democrats. This is about what does it mean to be an American? What are the things that we care about above our policy disputes, which are important? There's a set of values that represent the glue of this country, and they are under attack by things just like that. We have to stop being numb to it. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, you need to stand on your feet, overcome your shame, and say something.
Do you feel like there's any legitimate investigative value to what happened here today, or is this just a political exercise?
I can't answer that because I don't know exactly what they're investigating. The questions about Hillary Clinton and the Steele dossier strike me as more of the same. I didn't learn anything new in there. Maybe they did. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question from Fox News, in fact. Your handling of the Flynn interview, how is it consistent with the investigations roadmap for agents, the Domestic Investigations Operations Guide?
Entirely consistent, in my view.
Give
me your question, next level down. What do you mean?
No, I mean the Domestic Investigations Operations Guide is the roadmap for investigations for all agents. And there is a special section for sensitive matters and individuals. And I'm wondering if you feel comfortable that your handling of Flynn was completely consistent with that.
I do. I do. Very much so.
Bolton's have criticized you for failing to remember key events.
All right, I'm going to interrupt because I just want to recount a couple of things he said. The truth matters. Stand up for our values. Speak the truth. Stop being cowardly. Really? Our values? You mean, Director Comey, you mean illegally leaking to the press a memo that you made in a private interaction with the President of the United States? You mean setting up General Flynn the way you did, the way you actually admitted on MSNBC? Do you mean not prosecuting a criminal who is Mrs. Clinton? Really, it's unbelievable the crime she's committed, including selling our uranium as State Secretary of State for in exchange for tons of money to the Clinton Foundation, to the Russians. But no prosecution there. But that's our values, right? And then trying to take down a duly elected president using salacious, unverified information. Taking on the assignment like as though you're a god. That's our values? Somehow I don't think so. I want to hear the last Comey. I think we can get that one in. It's the last thing he said in that gaggle. It's clip 14.
Okay, so maybe for you or your attorney, my understanding is that when you shared your memos with your legal team, that there was a follow-up for a classified containment operation by the Bureau. Was there a spill of classified information when you shared those memos?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about something like that.
So, Director Comey,
well, that's important to talk about whether classified information was mishandled.
Whether you think it is or not, I'm not going to talk about it one way or another. Go ahead.
Sir, we're seeing more increased tweets from President Trump on the investigation. We're seeing more movement out of Mr. Mueller's investigation. Is this a sign it's wrapping up soon and a sign of the White House feeling the pressure?
I don't know, nor do you, I suspect, because it's been done professionally, incredibly quickly, but I don't know whether it's done. Only the investigators know that, and we'll see. Yes, ma'am.
There was a new report related to the Senate intelligence investigation. Did that come as a surprise, any of the findings, and how serious was the Russian threat during the 2016 election?
I haven't had a chance to see it, so I can't comment.
Director Comey, you said you wanted these hearings to be public. Do you anticipate when Democrats take control coming back to the Hill again, potentially answering some of these questions in public again?
Look, I don't love the idea of coming back as great as you are, but I respect this institution. It's why I'm here cooperating with the Republicans. I wanted it in public. They wouldn't do it. So I'm not going to thumb my nose at them or the Democrats.
Are there substantive changes from your testimony when you were here, whenever that was, I guess, a year ago in the summer, that you would want to have another public testimony at all? I mean, do you feel like there's anything?
You know what? I'm going to interrupt again. I had hoped to play the whole thing, but you know what? We'll put it on our Facebook page and you can hear the whole thing because it really is worth listening to. The middle part was very meaty. And I want to remind you that Jim Comey basically admitted that he leaked that memo of his conversation with the president to the press. Because he was hoping to set up a special prosecutor, and he was hoping it would be his good friend Robert Mueller, appointed by his good friend Rod Rosenstein. It's a very happy little crew, but they're very proud of their values and their ethics. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.